Welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings podcast with Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist. Control Talk Now, your source for control news you can use. And now, here is Eric.
Welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings podcast. This is Eric Stromquist for the week ending February 15th, 2015. Hopefully you remember Valentine's Day. If you didn't, you probably are listening to this podcast because that's probably your only option. So, but hey, I am joined as usual by the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Kenny Smyers from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kenny, big dog, welcome to the show.
Oh, I love the way you get the show started with that high momentum, the peaking. But I'll tell you what, Eric, we're celebrating our coldest day of the year. So I think we're 3 degrees or some ridiculous thing. And with the wind chill, it's about minus 10, 12. But who cares? It's always colder somewhere else. So.
Well, I tell you what, it's supposed to get cold in Atlanta. We're actually supposed to get a snowstorm tomorrow. They're expecting 1 inch of snow. So the city is getting ready. They've got the snow plows out. People are lining the grocery stores, being prepared for this because this could be a catastrophe and kids won't be going to school. It's President's Day, so if you're a kid, you're probably upset about that. You're not going to get a snow day because it's a holiday anyway. So Kenny, how was the Valentine's Day?
It was very nice, Eric. In fact, we decided to take a repose from this cold weather. We went to a local resort hotel type of thing, got some sauna, got some whirlpool, got some warm pool water. So we just came back this morning. So it was a great little Valentine's soiree to, nice environment. So we needed it.
Good deal. Well, I tell you what, buddy, I did what all good husbands do. I put a lot of thought into the Valentine's gift and went to the place that you go to get the great Valentine's Day gift. So the question is it jewelry? That's a thing of the past. Is it flowers? That affects the economy in a negative way. Is it candy? Hey, we're a health-conscious society now. So what do you get the modern-day woman to rock her world? Well, Kenny, I'm about to tell you what I got Anna for Valentine's Day. So check this out. So, Kenny, I got her the Drop Cam Pro. So where the enlightened guy goes now to shop for his lady is Best Buy, the electronics company. I mean, an electronics department. So what this is, Kenny, it goes with the Nest thermostat. It goes with the iPhone. Anna worries a lot about our two-year-old, Evelyn Grace. So this way she can take this little, it's a wireless video recorder. She can move it around. She can find it on her iPhone or iPad. So she can put it in her room at night, keep an eye on her. Or if she wants to put her in the backyard and let her play, she can put it out and let her play in the backyard with it. So it's a really, really cool device. So I hit a home run with that. So I'm actually,
that's enormous. Wow.
I'm actually in pretty good shape. But while I was there, Kenny, I was sort of amazed. If you are a residential wholesaler selling controls, your biggest competitor right now is the sales guy at Best Buy. He was trying to sell me Nest thermostats, and I just told him that I had tried Nest before and wasn't really happy with it. He wasn't dissuaded. He rolled me over to the smoke detector. I already bought a couple of those. I haven't installed them yet. So I told him I had some of the really cool Nest smoke detectors. I bought the drop cam for my wife. And then, Kenny, he rolled me over to absolutely the coolest thing in the world. And I got to show you this, big dog. And this sort of gets back to our Andy McMillan at Ken's Collaborative Community. So this will be relevant when we talk a little bit more about Ken's and Claire's Collaborative Community. This is the Hue. And what it is a starter kit, Kenny. You can put up to 50 lights on this. It has a wireless hub in it. It had 3 bulbs in this particular set. And you take this thing, you screw the light bulbs in. They're LEDs. They'll last for 15 years or so, they say. And then you download an app. And, Kenny, you can get 16 million different colors out of each one of those light bulbs. And it's like the coolest thing in the world, dude. You sit there, and I've got the 4 lights in the bedroom, so you can have different moods if you want to. You can change the colors by just hitting the button. You can actually take a painting, Kenny. And you can take the painting and you can take one of the little icons and draw it onto the, just circle it over the color you want out of the painting. and your lights will be that color. It is like the coolest thing ever. And, you know, I've been accused of a lot of things in my lifetime, you know, one of them being technically challenged. Yours truly got this thing up and running in about 15 minutes. It was really cool. So, again, you can put up to 50 lights on this network. And the cool thing about it, Kenny, you can set it up with a timer. So, like, they have one of the predetermined light scenes is called sunrise, right? So you can set it so at 7 o'clock or whatever time you want to wake up, the lights come on and you can have it fade in. So it's just like a sunrise in your bedroom. So that was pretty cool, dude. But I guess the gist of it for me, Kenny, is I'm really getting how Best Buy and others, the smart home is coming together. This was so easy. That along with the drop camera that Anna can use with her iPhone, I could have multiple ones of those set up. But it seems like the theme, Kenny, is wireless, do-it-yourselfers. It's here to stay. I don't know how a residential wholesaler is going to compete with the likes of Best Buy and your local Apple store. What do you think, Big Dog?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's the, going back to the contextualization, the only comments I have there is like some bright person mentioned at one of the meetings that there's always a consequence. So the more you put on your network, the more bandwidth you're using, the more you're going to have to pay somewhere else to maintain it. And is that you tied to the to an occupancy sensor? So when you walk into your space, does it sense you? Or is it just simply just the lighting control? It doesn't have any kind of a sensing element?
You can automate it. Now, there is an app called If Then, which you can hook up to that. So I'm sure you could, you know, wire an occupancy sensor in if you wanted to. The free app, you can set up the different scenes, and then you can have the scenes come on at different times with it.
Well, I didn't mean to digress with that, because I wanted to get back to what you said about this disrupting the markets and the channels and whatever. You're absolutely right, Eric. The two-step distribution distributor is in danger of extinction. And this is just another way it's coming to us. In other words, it starts in the house. The disruption is so cool. You said it was easy to integrate into your existing. So you're building modularly from your iPhone to your now you got a camera set up. Now you've got the lighting set up, and it's all based on the central router at the house. So this contextualization concept is just going to grow, and people are going to take that desire and that assumptions to their workspace and want that same kind of, connectivity and contextualization, so Therese Sullivan was right, and some of those Silicon Valley folks kind of get it, the big fight with Microsoft and Google and everything, it's all really starting to take shape. I mean, I can see it now.
Well, it is, Kenny, and you made a very interesting statement about using your bandwidth up, and you and I had a conversation last week. We moved into a new house, and when I went to look to get my internet connection, I bought the fastest the fastest residential cable connection I could, which was 100 megabits download and I think, 5 or 10 megabits upload speed. And out of that, when I moved, I checked into the business class. And what I learned from that, Kenny, was that that the residential, that's 100 megabits best case, and your bandwidth is limited. They'll charge you for extra bandwidth if you go over a certain amount of bandwidth. With the business class I got, there are different packages you could get, but the one I got is guaranteed 100 megabits download, I think 10 up, no matter what, and the bandwidth is unlimited. This gets to your point about the bandwidth. So if you think about that, so that's really cool. Now, one of the people at work was telling me that Google, and let's get back to Therese Sullivan, buildingcontext.me, she had an interesting theory about why Google bought Nest, and she talked about contextualization and sort of wrapping it all together. So keep in mind, I'm paying a good bit of money every month to get 100 megabits download speed guaranteed from my local provider. One of my employees tells me that Google is in the process of building their own infrastructure, their own cable infrastructure. I signed up for it, and fortunately, it's coming to Atlanta. It's not in my area yet, but Atlanta's one of the test cities. They're talking about 1,000 megabits or whatever it is, download speed. In other words, 10 times what I'm paying for business class and unlimited bandwidth. So you start thinking about that master plan of bringing it all together. And Kenny, it really is going to be your home is going to be, You're going to be able to walk into a room and the lights are going to change based on your mood. You can change these lights. You can hook them up, the hue, you can hook it up. So if you wanted to, you could hook it up to something. So if the stock market's up, the lights turn green. If it's neutral, they're yellow. If the stock market...
Or if you have a domestic argument, let's say you have violence in your house, you know, a loud scream, just like they have at all the major intersections in the cities now, they have acoustic sensors. So if there's a sound that can only be from broken glass and steel colliding with steel, that sends out a new frequency that can be picked up and sends emergency vehicles and police before the first 911 call comes in. So I just, you're right. And I'll tell you what, just taking it even further, there's a movie called Kingsman that came out. We went and saw that, right? And guess what? Guess what's the most disruptive element possible? Is when some multi-billionaire gives away all the bandwidth you need, all free. All you just come in, sign for one of the chips, put it in wherever, and all of a sudden you don't have to pay for internet services anymore. So it's in a movie, but guess what? He's a bad guy, and he's an arch fiend, you know. So it's good versus evil, and he does that to control everybody at the right time to do something very catastrophic. And I don't take away the movie, but we're falling in the wake of a serious trend that's taken it all the way to the end zone. In other words, this thing could go so far out of bounds so quickly that you wouldn't even know it would hit you. But let's face it now, you're gonna have the home is gonna be the center of commerce now for not just you, but for everybody else that you deal with. That contextualization is for real. It's gonna tie in your energy use, your consumption, purchasing. I mean, when you start taking things out of your refrigerator, it'll know when you need to reorder. You can actually have a supermarket connect to your refrigerator and watch what you're taking out and know you need resupplied. You know, I mean, it's going to be App City, App Universe. Anybody can come up, like you just said, with a great idea now tied into it because you already got your base, you already got your equipment in, your router's working, you got tremendous download speeds, tremendous bandwidth, and now it's just the sky's the limit. You know what?
So Kenny, what happens with this? To your point, now how does this affect people like us? I mean, in other words, what is the role of a wholesale distributor going to be? I mean, what's the distributor that's going to be successful in the future? What's he going to look like?
I think you have to have a diversified portfolio, almost like a stock, like investments. You know, you have a certain amount of secure stuff that even, you know, it's going to hold true no matter what happens. You know, worst case scenario, when I was in the military, for instance, we used to play games all the time, and one of them was, okay, everything's going great. You know, you run through a couple of scenarios, you respond to it correctly, and all of a sudden, let's take away your base power. So now you have no electricity. Let's see how your generators and batteries hold up. Okay, communications. Let's just say I'm jamming everything you got. You can't communicate point A to point B. So you have other means of communication. You have landlines. So you can't give away the old school stuff because it's not always going to be a perfect environment. We'd like to believe that we're impervious, but, you know, winter storms we're talking about, you know, radio towers. Blocking, you know, somebody, viruses, or whatever. So I think what will happen is you'll have to take a certain amount of your stance towards modernity, and you're going to have to, you know, maintain portfolios where you don't put all your eggs in one basket, you know. So distributors have to be able to sort through new technology. It's almost like big data. You know, there's so much data, and then you aggregate it, it becomes meaningless. So you have to have actionable data. You have to have, you know, purposeful data. You have to have data that makes sense for your specific needs. So I think what will happen is people like school districts, the mush markets, municipalities, universities, schools, and hospitals, this is too much for them. They can't handle. This is like a fire hose coming into a, you know, very, very one or two people, you know, size connection. And so they're going to need people to kind of refine all this information, know about their legacy systems, know what the next best steps are, know when you're going, you know, we're going to go open or closed, almost like a flow chart, you know, as far as staying open and using those open protocols. Because one more thing that Trish said that I thought was very, 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 very poignant as far as a consideration is that you always have a consequence. When somebody introduces new technology, they have to have value, you know, they add the value, but they have to have a revenue stream. They have to get paid for it. So what happens is that if you keep going in these new technology routes without really doing some due diligence, you can find yourself bottlenecked going from open system, following that beautiful pipe dream, all the way to the most narrow, closed system that you can imagine, and that would be your service provider who wants to say, you got all these great services, but you got one choice, and that's me. My name's Google or Microsoft, and if you want these things, you got to sign up with me. So that's the danger.
It is a danger, and you and I both read a book, Zero to One, which we highly recommend. One of the guy that wrote it was one of the PayPal Mafia, which included Elon Musk and the guys at PayPal, you know, all these guys, the guy who founded Salesforce, all were at one point in time at PayPal. And he really argues quite conventionally that to be successful, you have to have a monopoly. And he argues monopoly versus capitalistic, and it's almost, he's arguing, just to your point, Kenny, that you have to be able to generate a revenue stream with that. I'm not doing this guy justice. I mean, is he like one of the smartest guys you've ever read? It's like 0 to 1 is the name of the book. I can't remember the guy.
I have it right here. His name is Peter Thiel. And he's working with Blake Masters, and he teaches business classes at Stanford. And I have read this thing, and I'll tell you what, you're absolutely right. In fact, he challenges all the economic theories that we're trying to live by and go by. And the whole Adam Smith about openness and free markets and all this stuff is actually not propaganda, but it's lovely thoughts. But it's actually every major gain, every corporate advantage or the evolution of... Well, he says evolution is when you don't have a business plan. You don't know where you want to go. But the evolving market. The point being is that you've got to create something new. You can't keep making the same thing, because that takes you along the y-axis, and it's just the end. It's just another number. But if you,
technology comes out and it gets commoditized so much quicker. And we're going to argue the opposite side of that when we get into talking about Ken Sinclair's collaborative community and some of those concepts. But back to your point, Kenny, I think the role of a distributor, like you alluded to, one of the things of the distributor of the future is going to be somebody that I think is more of a consultant than anything else. A distributor is going to have to be a knowledge source that becomes an advisor to his clients, very much like a stockbroker maybe, but where you can advise the users and the systems integrators to the best technology. Because one of the trends we've been tracking for a while is that the technology changes so rapidly. And the model a lot of these guys have before, Kenny, they could bring a product out, get it in the field. It would take them a year or two to get it right, and then you'd have a product that you could ride with for the next 10 or 15 years, and it'd be a great product. But that has gone by the wayside, in that if it takes you more than 6 months to get your technology up and running, it's already been leapfrogged. By the time you get it fixed, your technology is obsolete. And I see that curve picking up. I don't see that slowing down. So I think part of what the users have to be aware of is brand X might have the best solution today, and brand Y might have the best solution tomorrow, and then brand X might have the best solution after that. And I think the distributor is going to have to be the source to survive that users and integrators can count on, to sort of let them know where the different companies are in this sort of evolutionary leapfrog that they're all beginning to play. So it's
not magic. You still have to have physical items somewhere, and somebody still needs to be able to put them in and make them work. So like in the weather we're having right here, there's just one emergency after another, and UPS solved a lot of that with their next day air. But still, somebody like Stromquist or DMS Controls Group has to have the item that's vital to that, the operational continuity of that building. Like we were talking about the folks down there in Kentucky, ISA, how when you have one critical component that goes down, if you don't have the means to replace that quickly, the entire system's down. Then you got to move people out of wards. You got to take people out of hospital annexes because they don't have fire protection for that area. So the role of the distributor will continue to constantly change. And we just said don't use the word evolve, because that means you don't really have a plan. And then when you say you evolve to the market needs, that means that you don't have a plan, because you're not pushing it. You're responding it because you don't have a strong enough plan, according to Mr. Thiel. But anyhow,
I think you're going to see maybe a schism, if you will, of distributors. Because if you look at the role of a distributor in the past, it was typically they stocked local inventory, they provided technical support, and I think that's sort of been evolving, because you have master distributors that stock a lot of inventory. But with the advent of next day air and UPS shipping and the internet, I mean, think about your guys' cost, and I know our cost. The amount of money it takes to stock and ensure inventory is huge. So I can almost see one role that certain distributors will take on will be an order fulfillment center. I know at Stromquist & Company, we sell a lot to other distributors along the lines of order fulfillment. And I think you'll always have that. Somebody's got to have it on the shelf where they can get it out. But what I'm thinking is that you might see that gap widen, where you got maybe a handful of distributors that are doing the order fulfillment across the country. And then I think where you're going to create your value is that other function, being more like a consultant, where you can be lean and mean. You're not tying your money up in inventory and stock and big warehouse spacing, because that is very, very costly. And the fact of the matter is, you got several people across the country that sell to anybody at a low price. And you know this from talking to your customers. If they can get it for, you know, cheaper because somebody else doesn't have the overhead, and those people typically will sell the product but not provide the technical support. They take the opposite side of that sort of service and price continuum. So they'll go over here, give you a super low price, but there's no service, there's no follow-up. Don't bother asking them a question about what the product does because they don't know. And then on the other side, you got distributors, full service distributors, that are trying to stock the inventory but provide the technical support and the warranties. I mean, think about what it costs to just warranty a controller, even though the factories will do that. Just the paperwork and the time that's involved in doing that, there's a cost to that. So I think where a lot of distributors are sort of committing business suicide, Kenny, is they're trying to meet the price of the low price, no service distributors that are just basically putting an internet store front up or maybe even have inventory and provide the same level of service, and you just can't. You're not going to survive like that. So I think the well-educated consumers realize that if they want to get great service and support, which these buildings a lot of time is critical, They're understanding that there's a difference between price and cost, and we've even had customers, Kenny, sometimes where they just want the lowest price, and we'll agree to, if you want the lowest price, that's fine, we'll give you this price, but if you need technical support, it's going to be X amount of dollars per hour for that. So I think it's all going to shift around, but to stay in the middle is suicide. You either got to go, I think, full service or full price, no service, and it's going to make for some interesting times for our consumers. And in having a conversation with Jim Young and Howard Berger about that, there's so many choices now and so many players coming into the marketplace, as we've talked a lot about on Control Trends, Kenny. The users are really setting themselves up to get in big trouble if they're not exactly sure what they're doing. So they got more choices than ever. With more choices comes more opportunities to have things go awry. So I think that the distributor could also become a guide, if you will, through the jungle of possibilities.
Sure, an intermediary, and I think, I believe that you don't give up an opportunity or an advantage that you have. You know, staying consistent with some of the things we just talked about with 0-1. So if you have an exclusive area and you have a good, strong relationship, two-step distribution, and some vendors have really remained true to that, and they've survived the internet frenzy where people are selling stuff on, you know, through disruptive channels, not authorized or whatever. So you take whatever you can hold on to from that part of the business that's still wholesome and still solid. But then you have to be prepared to have some e-commerce, and that's the collaboration going on, like you were saying, with fulfillment centers that are distributors. Controls Group North America is a perfect example where that actually comes into being, because you have people that can combine their sales and really exact some attention from the vendors, manufacturers, and keep the world stable to that point. But by the same token, there's going to be certain distributors that have a better economy of scale with multiple locations, larger, deeper pockets and whatever, but they still can take advantage of the relationships, the presence that everybody has, and being collaborative with the information. So I have access to this guy's information, and the networking, the technology is so cool that makes that possible. So I think you have that, and you have your collaboration, and then you have the ear to the new technology, and then you basically invest your time and energy learning how to put those new technologies into the most effective solutions. And they're not always the same. Every day they're different. There's different budgets. There's different requirements. There's urgencies. There's people changing over. You start these long sales cycles, and by the time it's time for this thing to ripen and go into actually purchasable project, the guy is retiring. His new his replacement wants nothing to do with that. They want a whole different style. They want the latest and greatest. So, I mean, you have to be able to just really and truly stay on top of stuff. And like you said, too, stay lean and mean as possible. Don't create duplicities.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, let's roll on in. I want to cycle back around. As you guys know, last week, Kenny and I missed a couple weeks, so we spent most of last week talking about the Control Trends Awards. And I will say about that we're in the process of editing videos. We'll be posting those. But, Kenny, let's cycle back around and let's frame up Ken Sinclair's collaborative community, because in a certain way, it sort of flies in the face of what Peter Thiel's saying. And I think there's a lot of merit to what Ken's about. So set that up for us, and let's talk a little bit about Ken Sinclair, automatedbuildings.com, and what he's doing with this collaborative, his connected
Community Collaboratory. Collaboratory, yeah. And I'll tell you what, Ken's, he's fun. He's a very personable guy. He's very humorous, and he's very humble. But he's very proud of the fact that he started this, he hosted and moderated the Connected Community Collaboratory. And I was just say collaboratory. I don't know how exactly. I hear everybody saying it different, and we'll call it the Triple C's. You're right, but anyhow, it's a panel of smart building control experts that set the stage for very informative smart building discussions. And in that collaboration environment, you have people that represented different walks of life or different technologies with different pursuits. And sometimes they could be competitive and antagonistic, but in this environment, they came in as friends. So you have BACnet sitting at the table with Inocean sitting at the table with the representative from Lauren sitting at the table with somebody from Link Spring sitting at the table with John Petsy from Sky Foundry. And every one of them came there with the intent of collaborating. And then the gentleman from ESI, Paul Oswald, was there as well. And they're brilliant people, and they sat down, and in that two-hour period or whatever it was, I think it went over that, they really covered what the limiting factors were, where the issues were, and how the only way you can solve all the problems and make sure that this, whatever is being done, this new technology, as this is absorbed into existing networks and legacy systems, it has to be able to function with everything else. And the only way to do that is to have representation from all the parties. Like Mark Petok said, and we did a post, you did a video on him, no one company can do that anymore. No one company can see things through unless it's a proprietary approach where they want to control all ends of the equation and all the variables in the equation. That's one way to do it, but what's happening instead is a collaboration where people that are really good in their particular, they're how they make a living, let's just say, because this all boils down to economy. You know, people have to be able to buy and sell and make money to make the whole wheel keep turning. So the point was that he said that there was, people didn't think about cybersecurity back when they were creating protocols and BACnet when that was being written, because that threat wasn't there. But in a short period of time now, we're seeing that the buildings out there, there's like 200,000 vulnerable buildings because of the protocols that they used did not have advanced measures for cybersecurity protection. So the collaboratory, the collaboration will bring the whole community together faster, quicker with solutions. If one person's focusing on how they're going to protect the companies and networks against cybersecurity, cyber terrorism, and then the other guys are going to protect the community by investing the collaboration to make sure these protocols in Ocean and BACnet are friendly towards each other and they're not creating standards that won't seamlessly integrate. And so it's just a great idea. So Ken Sinclair, heads off.
I think what we're seeing is redefining competition, if you will. And I think, one of my teachers, Marshall Thurber, used to talk about you can play a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses. The stock market, for example, is a zero-sum game. Every time there's a transaction, somebody wins, somebody loses. And I think, culturally, you and I were part of that generation that was sort of raised to play a zero-sum game. Our parents lived through the Depression. They lived through scarcity. So we were sort of raised with that whole thing about a zero-sum game. Well, with the network economy came around, a zero-sum game is playing a zero-sum game is pretty much a way to assure that you are going to get annihilated. So, Ken Sinclair rightfully is bringing people together to talk about it. So if you're not playing a zero-sum game, you're playing a win-win game. And a win-win game is all about making things bigger. There's an unlimited amount of opportunities in our particular industry for all of us. But if you play in scarcity or play in zero-sum game, you're not going to be part of that. So it's a whole new metamorphosis, if you will, Kenny, where you're redefining what competition's all about. And so competition might be, you and I might collaborate on, well, how do we secure both of our systems? Because all of us face the cybersecurity threat, and at the same time, we compete on bid day. So it's redefined, and I think the old model's just not going to work anymore. And Mark Petok alluded to this in his talk at Ken Sinclair's CCC, and we actually posted that last week. So we really redefine it, Kenny. It's a whole new game, and I think you have to update your model about what competition is. And I don't have an answer to that. I think it's very dynamic right now. I think it's going to be changing. I think it's something we'll be talking a lot about. I think it will change over time very rapidly. But I think to be successful in business, you're going to have to pay attention to the collaborative competition pendulum, if you will, and where you fit on it and how you play on it.
Super. Yeah, I mean, that's a very good summary. In fact, there's a thing called co-opetition, and it came out of a summit meeting back, I think, 2008, where the example was Coca-Cola and Pepsi, and the dynamic competition that they experienced, where instead of trying to compete and take somebody's existing market, you both put your cannons away from each other and you expand the market. And that's what they did. They successfully increased the size of the market for sodas, some ridiculous amount, 110%. So Coca-Cola still was the biggest and baddest, and Pepsi was second, and they could be upset about that all day and night. But guess what happened? They both grew their market so significantly that they lost the menacing relationship they had because they were both so successful. Pepsi grew its market by 50%. I think Pepsi grew its market by 40-some percent. Everybody's happy. The market got bigger, the customer base got larger, and everybody, they made more profits. But it was, like you said, because they changed their philosophy. Instead of trying to fight each other and take somebody else's existing share of the pie, they just simply enlarged the pie 2, 3, 4, 10-fold, you know?
Kenny, so we will track this, the co-opetition or the new competition model is something we'll talk about. If you've got any thoughts on that, please reach out in comments, let us know what you think. Kenny, we had some other stuff we missed last week. Let's sort of get back on track and cover some of the posts. Honeywell came out with a new linkage, for example. Let's talk a little bit about
it. We sure did, Eric. Honeywell introduced their Q50-2004, so Q50-204 retrofit glove valve linkage. And I'll tell you what, it's about time. Honeywell is pleased to introduce their Q50-2004 globe valve linkage retrofit package. It allows you to use Honeywell direct coupled actuators to retrofit most of the manufactured globe valve in the field with no valve disassembly required. The linkage is easy to install with a wide variety of collar combinations. So that's the big to fit on that yoke there and fit around the to get a good solid base to be able to actuate the stem. So Honeywell's in the game now. Save money and time by replacing old electrical or pneumatic actuators with reliable Honeywell DCAs. For the building owners and the users out there listening, this is a great thing to do to convert your pneumatic systems if the valve bodies are still intact, still very good. But now you want to put some, you want to bring that into your network, and you don't want to use inner transducers going from pneumatic to 0 to 10 or 4 to 20. You put the new actuators in there, and you get a 5-year warranty on the actuators. So it's a great option to change over and make your buildings more operational efficient and more energy efficient.
Talk about networking. The folks at Haystack out there are announcing their conference for 2015. Let's give the folks about a little background on Haystack and why they might want to attend. What Haystack essentially is it's a tagging convention. You talk about a bunch of competitors getting together. This gets back to the co-competition. I think that was the word you used.
Co-opetition.
So for the users, it's very, very time-consuming if they're trying to get disparate systems to talk together and share the same sorts of information. So they've gotten together, they've agreed upon a tagging convention, and now all the major manufacturers are putting these tagging conventions in their control systems. So it's, I think, a great example of competitors getting together and creating a value that's going to make the pie bigger for all of them. So congratulations on that. We went to the first one, Kenny. It was very inspiring. Some of the great thought leaders in our industry are involved in that, and we'll be at this next meeting. What's the date on that? Have you got that?
Yeah, I do. I got it's May 18th through May 20th at the Cheyenne Mountain Resort in Colorado. Like you said, Eric, it's and they're looking for Haystack Connect. They want some organizational sponsors. They have 14 major sponsors so far and 3 media sponsors, and we're one of them. Control Trends is one of the media sponsors. But they're looking for presentations. And there's a call for papers and presentations is open until March 15th. But don't wait. Submit a paper here. And there's, we have the hot buttons on the Control Trends post. It's going to be a heck of a meeting because, again, like you say, when you get a bunch of bright minds into that kind of a venue, and everybody's really in a collaborating state of mind, that's when things happen. We saw some great presentations. We saw some showing off by Jason Briggs and Scott Mensch, where they showed off technology taking hold in the tagging convention. Many people believe that's the future, so that you don't have any more lost protocoling. John Petsy, when people get to see his contribution to the CCC, Ken St. Clair's CCC, is going to be where he really talks about the duplicities and taking things into the most simple forms, and tagging is going to be probably the simplest way to get meaningful data from every controller and every system, every network is going to generate meaningful data without mapping things and doing a lot of the arduous programming.
The labor out of it. I mean, I think one of your integrators was coined the term I'd never heard of it before, called link monkeys, where he was talking about how much time it took just to connect the different data points together, so it was easy for a user to get to. And speaking of Jason Briggs, Kenny, I tell you what, actually Scott Mensch, he is a techno geek, kind of like we are. We did a presentation, or Scott did, for one of our customers with a GoToMeeting, and Scott had his big TV out and his video cameras and all that. Impressive stuff. So if you ever want to see a great presentation, just get with Scott Mensch.
Plus, he's a drum master too, right?
Oh, he's all over it, man. He's all over it.
He'll have to show us more about what he's got going on with his drones, too.
Yeah. And then we talked a little bit about Ken Sinclair and his building collaborative, his CCC, which we've got more videos we'll be editing and getting posted on that. So we'll continue along those lines. And when we get them all done, Kenny, I'll put them all together on one page where they'll be easy to find. But again, congratulations to Ken Sinclair on that fantastic idea and what he brings to the industry with that. And then that brings us to Linkspring. It's got a second-generation Modbus to BACnet bridge. Pretty cool product.
Well, you sure do, Eric. I'm just trying to keep up with you. You're moving pretty good. So we're going to go right through the core there of some of the posts that we haven't been able to talk about. Yeah, but yeah, I think what's happening here is these guys, Linkspring is committed to come out with new products. The Linkspring CyberPro was a big hit, and I think it's just a commitment. Terry Swope and Mark Petock and the folks at Linkspring, they're going to put more products out there. But they introduced what's called a 1000. I'm just looking for the name of it. It's the generation Modbus to back that is called the... Where is that? Onyx, ONYXXTM-MB311 is the second generation Modbus to BACnet bridge solution. Embedded with the Linkspring Smart Module TM and running Linkspring Helix TM IP software framework, the Onyx MB311 is more powerful and takes more powerful and takes Modbus to BACnet protocol translation to the next level by not only transmitting up to 2,500 Modbus points to manageable BACnet points, but also converts Modbus slave devices into virtual BACnet devices using virtual BACnet routing. So acting as a master Modbus device, the Onyx 3MB311 manages all Modbus RTU and TCP slave devices connected to it. So apologize for that long-winded read there, but it's a little bit complicated product-wise, but I'm sure Linkspring is going to be very successful with that new product implementation.
They came and did a little presentation at our place on it, and I think it's going to be a fantastic product that's going to really allow them to take a much wider reach, if you will, and reach more out to the edge. We hear that a lot about getting to edge devices. So congratulations to Terry and Mark and the team at Linkspring for this product. Reach out to your local Linkspring dealer and ask for a demonstration.
Eric, next up we had the Better Building Summit, May 27th through the 29th. And I don't know about you, but the good thing we get those calendar helps in our iPhones now, because there's just so much going on. You got to pick your fights, pick your meetings. But I know that Johnson has something coming up in March.
They have their second annual business conference. You know, Kenny and I covered the one last year. Great conference. They brought a lot of great speakers in. It was so successful that they're doing another one this year in March. They want us to come in and do it again, but my wife's having a baby in March, so I'll take the camera down and show you where I'm linked, or actually chained to the desk here. So I'm not going anywhere anytime soon.
Right, and then there's a Tritium Open for Innovation meeting in London is in April. And it just goes on. But this the Better Building Summit, that's May 27th and 29th, again, this is with the Department of Energy, and it's going to be at the Marriott Wardman Park in Washington, D.C. And basically, it's this concept of better buildings is really and truly an invitation because it's all about stakeholders that come together in D.C., the core of our government, and they participate in sessions and meetings focused on the sharing of the most successful strategies for achieving energy savings through energy efficiencies. And there's another great post, but they're talking about they're taking measures to make sure that they have the most distinguished city leaders from the country and CEOs from various countries companies to present the what's available, what works, and what doesn't work. So you talk about networking. Imagine if you get to sit there and listen to three or four mayors from around the country talking about the programs that they've used successfully or unsuccessfully to prepare you for your next choices. So it's a very important meeting.
Let me tell you about that. I want to tell you an interesting experience I had this week. There's a local grocery store chain that is in the Southeast. It might be all across the country or whatever, but there's the guy that runs the Southeastern region, the president of this food chain, is on commercials a lot, right? So I stopped in. They had a Starbucks there. I stopped in. I see this guy. He walks up to me, and he goes, "Can I buy you a cup of coffee?" And I went, "Yeah, sure, of course." And I said, "I recognize you. You're the guy on TV. My wife loves it. She shops here all the time." So he pulls out, gives her a $3 coupon or whatever. But I asked him, he said, "What business are you in?" And I said, "We do energy saving stuff." And this guy was so proud, Kenny. He went on and on about, "Yeah, we've been upgrading our systems, blah, 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 blah. We save enough money on our lighting. They've done all LED lighting retrofits to light the city of Dallas." Now, I don't know how true that is, but what was interesting, here's a CEO who lit up when he had the opportunity to talk about his energy strategies. Now, he couldn't tell you what products he was using or anything like that, but he knew they were in there. They were proud of it. He knew they were saving him a ton of money. Went to another chain, and as you can see by this picture, you know, they got an Energy Star thing right there. This is something when you walk in, it's right there. So it gets back to the fact that mayors, CEOs, and building owners really are seeing being energy conscious as part of their brand. So I think when the message to our integrators and to our fellow distributors is the CEOs are really on board with these things now, so reach out and talk to them. They're proud of it.
I'll see. All right, Eric. Next up would be the Ken St. Clair, but we've already talked about his 2015 Connected Communities, but you wanted to revisit Andy McMillan's post. That was posted last week, and I'll tell you what, he is the president of BackNet International, and he really and truly brought some interesting information to the group at the CCC. Tell us about that.
I want to talk about Andy again just simply because, first of all, he's very articulate. And one of the points he had at the CCC was that lighting, managed lighting, is the next big lead-in. That the psychological effects of lighting, and I'm having an experience of this with the new toy I got, the Hue, because you can change the mood of a room. There's a lighting setting for concentration, which has been proven to help people concentrate to read more. There's relaxation lights that you lighting schemes that you can put on. So the point being, I really think there is something to this. I think Andy is really on the forefront of this and manage lighting because it can increase productivity. It can increase people's health. The way buildings are lit is a huge piece. So Andy is basically saying, forget about talking about the energy savings right now. That's just the gravy. Go in and talk about the increased productivity and the psychological effects that having a managed lighting approach can have on your tenants and your employees. And I think the thing about that, Kenny, is that you have to think differently if you're going to be successful. So this is going in. And again, the first thing that the CEO at this big grocery store talked about was his lighting. He knew all about his lighting. And he's talking about the LED lightings and the fact that people are more cheerful when they're in there. His employees are happier. He's selling more products since he's got the LED lights. And so there is a correlation between lighting, managed lighting, as Andy says, and productivity and sales. So I think that we all need to get educated on that. And we need to put a segment of Control Trends to this. We need to understand this and educate our community. Or if anybody in our community is educated on this, please reach out to us. We'd love to get you on the show to talk about it.
Sure, because, not just security, but when you think about the retail and you think about an establishment, you know, in the winter time, where if you have nice bright lights, you feel secure. The parking lot makes you feel comfort, you know, because you don't feel spooky. You know, darkness has a tendency to I think retard motion. People don't, you know, once it gets dark out, people want to go home and relax, and they don't feel you know, anxious to go out and you know, shop and whatever. But if you have a nice environment, you know, so the retail world but then to have those lights operate efficiently, you know, we talk about light litter and whatever. The worst thing, I still every day I drive by these stores, I drive by segments of the highway, the lights are on, and it just I can't get comfortable with that. I know it's wrong, I know it's one day it'll be fixed, and I think you just have to make a, you know, blow the whistle on the whole thing till people pay attention and just realize how much money they're losing by not taking care of those lights, by not investing. A small investment returns a tremendous, there's a quick ROI, but it's also good for the environment, reduces the carbon footprint. But like you said too, now that you take the aggressive, the way to get people to come to your store now is to talk about how you know what's going on, and you do it successfully, and it makes a better retail environment, a better food, you know, court environment, whatever the guy was selling. So I think you're right. And the thing that Andy said about, you know, energy is kind of passe, you know, trying to save energy. Of course you want to save energy, but now what you want to do is you want to let people know that they're going to have a better operation. They're going to have faster heal times for the hospitals. They're going to have, you know, better retail success because they get it. People are you know, basically driven by, you know, behaviors. And if you understand these behaviors and you put that knowledge to work using your lighting system to create the most favorable environments for schools, for children, after lunch, all of, you know, they're a little bit sluggish, lethargic because they just ate. You know, if you can really truly manage the lighting to get that child back into focus quicker, it makes the teacher's job easier. Everything works. It's win-win-win across the board. You're saving, of course, your energy, but you're also adding value to people in new ways, and that's that new technology. That's 0 to 1.
Logical effect of colors have been known for years, different colors can affect people. So now imagine being able to change your lighting to change moods. I know last night I went in with my iPad, hit a couple buttons, and all of a sudden now the bedroom is drenched in red light.
Passion, huh?
Yeah, well, didn't quite work out that way, but I think at some point in time it might. But so it the tools are there, Kenny, and I think a lot of it, getting back to the role of distributors or integrators or how you differentiate yourself, I think a lot of it is going to be how you put the tools together. Like, so you, the palettes for the painters have gone to having an infinite number of colors and paints and materials to work with. And it's going to be up to us to create the individual masterpieces. So we have to think differently, as Steve Jobs said, and work differently. All right, Kenny, what do we have up next?
We at ACI releases a new universal dry media differential pressure transmitter. Barry Gordon and the folks at ACI have done it again. They understand that sensor applications can often differ from job to job and accommodate the most differential pressure sensing applications. ACI now offers a universal range option. So a single A/DP-10U, as in universal, will give you field adjustable ranges from 0 to 1 inch, 0 to 2.5, 0 to 5, and 0 to 10 inches flexibility with all your outputs, 4 to 20, 0 to 5 volts DC, 0 to 10 volts DC, and this is critical for optimizing pressure within your facility. So well done, ACI, another new product. No surprise, they keep beating the drums, and that's why they're so successful year in and year out.
They really are, Kenny. They really, really are. And another company that's like that is Belimo with their Zip Economizer, and we actually did another live stream training with Belimo. They came in, we had a room full of people, and we were blasting out the live stream training out to the cyber world. This was kind of interesting, Kenny, because one of the presenters was actually in Danbury, and she was coming in via GoToMeeting. We brought her in, and then we had a local presenter there as well, and our people were able to actually, the students were able to converse with the lady in Danbury, Vanessa. So I think we're seeing a new trend here, a new way to get people trained. And you had a chance to look a little bit at that, didn't you?
I sure did, Eric. And what we're going to do is we're going to get back, you know, like we were saying about, you know, the triangle that happens. You have social forces, economic forces, and technical forces, and at different times the length of those triangle sides increases. But if you're doing the streaming, and I could get my customers on board, and I could tag team into that streaming session, it's amazing. So we could have people all over the world, all over the country, and all over the world taking advantage of a single transmission. And what's really cool about it is it's interactive. You're not locked out. You're just not watching a webinar, you know, and then get up and go get a cup of coffee. If you wanted to ask a question, you have the means of contacting the people in Danbury, Connecticut. So it's just it's another fascinating way to apply technology at a very low cost and very impactful. So you can, instead of just 10 people in a room getting an opportunity to get trained on that zip economizer, you could have 1,000 people in 10 different locations or 100 different locations getting hip at the same time.
Idea, Kenny. And so we live streamed that, and then we archived it. So there's actually a recording. You can see the post up on Control Trends of that recording. So it's actually archivable as well. So again, we see that as being a big trend. And I want to thank Michael Bonner at StrongQuest. Mike has really adopted this technology. You can see the improvements since Mike has got involved. So Mike, thanks very much for the way you've sort of embraced that. And talk about how a guy embraces it. We had Rob Allen, the young gun. Rob Allen came up, did a 7 minutes in control with Mike Marston from EZIO, talking about the beast. And again, you can see Mike Bonner's magic there a little bit too. He and Rob were working together to produce the 7 minutes in control with Rob Allen. So it's good to see Mike. They talk about the beast. They talk about EZIO. They talk about LEM. They talk about SK Foo. They talk about the worldwide conference coming up in Paris, which Kenny and I are going to. I'm going to get this chain off of my leg, Kenny, by next September, so we can go to Paris. And hopefully we'll have a bunch of people from the U.S. going over there too. Reach out to Mike or Lim, or reach out to us. We'll hook you up. What better way to go? These guys, top hat. We talked about it last week. They're great hosts. The meeting's very, very useful. They got great technology. And if you have any doubt about that, look at the Control Trends videos we posted from Madrid. But where else can you go, Kenny? Rub elbows with integrators from all over the world. So that's going to be a fantastic event. So anyway, congratulations to Mike on that. That was, Rob Allen. That was Rob Allen with Mike Marston, 7 minutes of control. And that brought us back to a good friend of ours, right, Kenny? Mr. Mark Pitok.
Mark Pitok, right. Well, again, this is part of the CCC, Triple C, or C Cubed. No, that was somebody else used that already. Let's go with Triple C. Anyhow, Mark, you know, he has a lot of time, and he's invested a lot of professional energy, and then he is very giving. The information he provides in that short 3-minute video is really, really, I think, important, because it summarizes what collaboration is all about. And again, it goes into the where collaboration can have such a meaningful impact is to get things done quicker by, instead of everybody trying to do the march, get through the journey themselves individually, you combine several organizations, several companies, several insights and perspectives, and what you get is an incredible synergy and a rapidity that is unparalleled. So he believes that collaboration is going to solve things like cybersecurity, like getting the building automation, our world involved and giving us enough insight, referencing, and knowledge about cybersecurity happens when everybody shares and collaborates, instead of one company trying to do it by themselves, and then the time it takes, the expense it takes. Collaboration is a solution, and then what happens is you build an ecosystem around things. You know, people begin to support that. You know, once people get involved and contribute, the co-opetition begins to happen, because not everybody's competing directly for the same market, but they take the knowledge that they've gained in a very short period of time, and they're able to apply it quicker. Things get faster, or things get improvements occur faster. The transition to like with cybersecurity will occur faster if people collaborate than everybody trying to do it by themselves.
Well, congratulations again to Mark. Mark is one of the great spokespeople in our industry, and great insights. And again, congratulations to Ken Sinclair for putting this group together. The speakers he put together for this are phenomenal. We'll have more next week, so be sure to stay to Control Trends for that. And then now, Kenny, we're getting to some of the fun stuff. We're getting some of the highlights. We're trying to edit up the different videos from some of the different awards. First one we had up this week was the Control Trends Neptronics, who won the Small Vendor of the year. We have a lot of admiration for these folks, right, Ken?
We sure do, Eric. We had an opportunity to visit these folks in August, and we met Louis Melgares up on his home turf, which was Montreal, Canada. We got to meet Biagio. We got to meet Zev, president and owner. And what we found was an incredibly competent, kind of quiet manufacturer of of a smaller level, but Neptronix was founded in 1976. It's a private corporation. Neptronix designs, manufactures, and distributes products for all aspects of the HVAC industry, including intelligent controllers, electronic actuators, actuated valves, humidifiers, and electric heaters. And to take that to one degree further, they actually had the patents on some of the first ball valve assemblies, first capacitant fail-safe, and a lot of bright guys, and Lewis was very proud. He had a good smile on that. And Lewis was recently promoted to vice president of marketing for Neptronix. So good things happen to good people.
That's well said, Kenny. I liked it. Good things happen to good people. All right. I'm going to remember that one. That's simple but true, hopefully, right?
So, yeah.
I like that better than when bad things happen to good people. We're just going to stick with good things happen to good people.
There you go. Speaking
of that, buddy, we got the Honeywell Momentum event coming up. In September 20th through 22nd out in Arizona, I guess. Is that...
No, it's at Palm Desert, California. In fact, this is going to be one of those ones where people are going to be jealous if you got to go. And I see a conflict of time there. In fact, that might be directly competing for space and participation with the EZIO event. But just a little bit about it. This is going to be at the... It's called Honeywell's Momentum 2015 Partnership. It's September 20th through the 22nd at the JW Marriott Resort and Spa in Palm Desert, California. And I heard this. My brother had been there, and he told me that this is one of the prettiest places that he's ever been to. It's quite the place to have an event, especially when you have a lot of professionals, industry leaders, and they all come together to talk about the evolving market trends and discover Honeywell's vision in the intelligent building marketplace. Now, and they've got quite a golf course. So the Desert Springs Golf Club is supposed to be top-notch. So for the people that want to go there, you can sign up right now, make your room reservations, and commit early because it's probably going to sell out.
Probably going to sell out, and it's Honeywell does a great job with this. This is their signature event. They flip-flop with Niagara. The Niagara Summit is one year. The next year is the Honeywell Momentum event, so it should be a fantastic event. They usually are. I think Honeywell has been really, I think, revamping their product portfolio, Kenny, sort of regrouping, if you will. I bet they're going to have a lot of incredible announcements to make at that conference as well, so we'll look forward to that. But something's got to give because we're already committed to Paris. So, we'll see. Hopefully that's not a conflict with EZIO. And then finally, Kenny, you mentioned this earlier in the show, the Niagara European Summit is taking place April 19th through the 21st in London, England. So if you're looking for a reason to go to London, which is a great town, Kenny and I were over there last year, and we're going to try and cover this again, sort of on a short leash with the new baby coming. But I think that's going to be a spectacular event as well. So, Kenny, that kind of rounds up our week. Got some interesting themes we're tracking. Looking forward to a lot of stuff coming up. The Johnson event, if you haven't registered for that, reach out to your local Johnson distributor. That's, again, coming up in March. I don't have the date on that. It's somewhere on the Control Trends site. Reach out to your local Johnson Controls distributor. That will be a fantastic event as well. So lots and lots of events, Kenny. You should have no excuse at all for being a wallflower and staying at home. You need to get out, join the community, have a good time, learn. As I said, eat, love, pray. It's like what? Learn, play golf, and sell controls. Is that something along those lines? Anything else before we wrap it up, Kenny?
No, that's about it, Eric. Again, it's good to be back on the air, and I think we're seeing just because the calendar says it's February 15th, that means we're halfway through February, which means we're getting closer to spring. I'm all for that. I saw some interesting posts here recently about people are starting to send postcards to each other with beach scenery on them to keep them in the game, keep them motivated to get through the rough edges of winter, but. I'm looking forward to it.
I heard that Ken Smyers came out of his cave on February 14th and saw his shadow, so we got another 6 or 7 weeks of wintertime, something like that.
Hey, I'll tell you what, before we did this show, I was out there shoveling snow, because if it doesn't snow, it blows in front of your garage doors, and I'll tell you what. You can have it. I have a daughter who went out to San Diego. Actually, she's in Del Mar, and she, I don't think she's coming back.
Would you ever come back? We were out in San Diego for the CGNA meeting last year, I think it was, and we got to see your lovely daughter out there, and she lives in a part of heaven that I think if you're lucky enough to get there, you just never want to come out of it.
Yeah,
so there we go. We got the chili. Man, the myth, the legend, Ken Smyers. I'm Eric Stromquist. You've been listening to Control Talk Now, your video and smart buildings podcast for the week ending February 15th, 2015. We appreciate you guys and girls tuning in. We'll see you next week. Until then, stay in control.
Indeed, Eric.